Later this hour, MSU Poli Sci professor Michael Colarisi joins us with a topic as relevant as ever: what happens when outside countries become involved in civil wars? Is that more often good for democracy or bad for democracy? And we learn about the Great Lakes Book Project also this hour. But first, speaking of the Great Lakes, with snow piled deep across the Great Lakes region, there are hopes that the upcoming melt will push lake levels higher. It's a scenario envied by many in the American West, especially in California, where residents are being hammered by the severest drought in three decades. While U.S. states and Canadian provinces bordering the lakes are currently banned from shipping water from the region, the situation begs a bigger question. How could Michigan's and the region's approach to water change over time? And are Great Lakes states and provinces leveraging their water-rich circumstances as well as they can? Well, that's a topic our next guest wrote about recently in the Detroit News. Dale Buss has written about economics and business for Forbes and the Wall Street Journal and other publications. He's based in suburban Detroit. Dale Buss, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me.
Your article suggests there is a discussion, maybe in its early stages right now, but there is some kind of discussion about how Great Lakes states like Michigan could navigate, pun intended, this unique situation we're in with so much fresh water nearby. Tell us more, please.
Well, I think it boils down to the notion of whether Michigan can make better use of the law known as comparative economic advantage. I mean, look at North Dakota. Not known for much, my apologies to them, until oil was discovered there a while ago. It was discovered a long ways back, but when fracking and other methods made it more extractable, suddenly North Dakota has this huge comparative economic advantage, which you see in, you know, booming employment. The economy is taking off there. And so all I was doing in this piece was kind of exploring whether Michigan is doing its best job of exploiting the advantage of being right in the middle of all its fresh water, 21% of the world's supply. Pretty much the answer I came up with is we're not doing nearly as much as we could. And it's not the idea of shipping water wholesale away from the Great Lakes. That is for now banned by, as you mentioned, the Great Lakes Compact, although maybe we can get into the notion of how that could change over time. But especially given the drought in California, the idea is, well, they don't have water. They really need it. It's hampering their economy. We have all this water. Are we doing the best job of exploiting in a productive, you know, environmentally sound sense what we have here?
You write that Wisconsin is, quote, surging ahead of regional water rivals in this arena. What kinds of things are they doing in Wisconsin?
Well, the most interesting thing is they have something called the Water Council, and it's an initiative in the Milwaukee area. And in a lot of ways, what Milwaukee is doing is exploiting its own local comparative economic advantage. Much like Detroit is the Motor City, Milwaukee actually has long been a capital of water-intensive industries, going back to the brewing industry, the tanning industry, which was very water-intensive, and that gave rise over the decades to a lot of companies that are in water technology-intensive industries, like one called Badger Meter that makes a lot of the water meters that are used in homes and offices across the country. So what they're doing is a consortium of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, some of these local companies, entrepreneurs, and the state government got involved and said, what can we do to take advantage of this historic strength we have in water technology? And sure enough, they've put together something called the Water Council and a water initiative where they have opened up an incubator there. They're trying to get water-intensive startups or technology-intensive startups that have to do with water to be lured to Milwaukee, giving them, you know, tax breaks and incentives, funding, that kind of thing. And it does seem to be putting Milwaukee on the map in the sense that they have drawn a number of startup companies. People are talking about the connection between Milwaukee and this initiative and water. And, you know, what I was suggesting, and Mike Finney, when I talked to him from the MEDC, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, you know, did concede that this state hasn't at this point maybe taken advantage of our water resources in a similar sense to, for instance, how Milwaukee has.
Okay. Now, are we talking primarily commercial opportunities
here. Well, but also
here.
Research, because there's a heavy tie-in with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee as well. And it is in its formative stages, let's say, but they're probably 2 or 3 years into this effort, and they certainly got a head start on everyone else on the Great Lakes.
Would a shift like this, though, Mike or Dale, rely more on the private sector? I mean, to what extent is government important in leveraging this fresh water?
Well, I think it's like anything. The good ideas can come from government. They can come from the private sector. When it comes to encouraging particular verticals, types of businesses, you know, government can play a hugely important role with tax incentives and other things. And so I think there's a role for both. In Wisconsin, it was definitely and is definitely a private-public partnership, but the initiative can come from anywhere. So it could come from within government. It could come outside. You know, hopefully what would happen in Michigan is more of a happy meeting of private interests and government help, let's say, and incentives in pushing the state, you know, maybe in the direction of taking more advantage of the water that we have.
We're talking with journalist Dale Buss about Michigan's approach to all of its water resources and how that may change over time. It sounds like Michael Finney is at least aware of the possibilities. Would you agree with that? I mean,
he's
aware there's a lot of upside here.
Yeah, and I think a model for this, in some senses, has been the great success of the Pure Michigan campaign, which, you know, he has been involved with. You know, that started out, of course, as a tourism-based campaign, promoting Michigan and our wonderful water resources and a lot of other things. And it's been very, very successful, not only within Michigan, but within the neighboring states in the Midwest, and even as far as the East Coast and Texas and everywhere, getting people to recognize the attractiveness of Michigan as a tourist destination. Now, Mike Finney has been instrumental in kind of pivoting from that to use the Pure Michigan slogan and idea for business development. And I know there's been talk about, well, for instance, how do we work in the right-to-work idea into this, do we, that kind of thing. So the model is there, in a sense, for packaging Michigan. It's just it needs to be packaged more directly around the idea of our water resources.
You write also that there are industries, as always, that are more reliant on water than others. With the situation out west, did it ever come up in the people that you spoke with that we may see a migration of some of these water-reliant industries to Michigan over time?
Yes, absolutely. And that is, in fact, part of what Wisconsin is counting on, is you lure businesses that need water. And there's no reason that Michigan couldn't be right in there doing exactly the same thing. And, you know, the advantage could ease over time if water desalination technology ever becomes, let's say, inexpensive and effective enough so that, say, California could just tap right into the Pacific Ocean. But for now, the Great Lakes just remain this incredibly tempting and alluring advantage that we have that they don't. And you never know how politics could change things as well in the coming decades. If climate change really is a long-term phenomenon, you know, we could be revisiting this in 5 or 10 years, and suddenly the Great Lakes Compact doesn't look nearly as safe as it does now.
Did that come up in your
conversation? Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, when you think about the far future, I interviewed Cheryl Connolly, the futurist for Ford, who, you know, made a note to me. She said, look, if you don't have water, you don't have anything. So the notion of blue, of blueness and blue resources indicating water, she said, could very easily and quickly become much more important than any other aspect of greenness, you know, of environmental sensitivities in other ways. And, you know, that's why some of these long-term and natural trends going on bear a lot of watching, obviously.
In doing your story, did you get any inkling that the ongoing drought in other parts of the country might eventually actually undo the water ban prescribed by the Great Lakes Compact?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly, when it came together 5 years ago, that was the Great Lakes states and the Canadian provinces were not certain necessarily that they were going to be able to get this passed, you know, the entire U.S. Congress and the Canadian Parliament as well. It, you know, there's a sense that exactly what you're saying, well, geez, all these other states are saying, we really like to find a way to tap in or trade for that water or whatever. Maybe we can send, you know, mangoes or avocados from California for a bunch of water, who knows. But so there is a wariness about that, and it's certainly you know, politics can uncover lots of possibilities that you never saw before, and so there's no reason to think it won't in this case as well.
Your story reminded me of something that I had forgotten about, and that was basically back in the late 90s, Ontario was looking very closely at exporting Great Lakes water to Asia.
Right, and that was one of the alarming things that sort of prompted the discussions that led to the compact.
Right. Well, we want to thank you for your time. It's an interesting discussion to consider how approaches to water policy may change as circumstances change, especially with Michigan in the middle of the Great Lakes. We want to thank our guest, journalist Dale Buss, whose article about this appeared recently in the Detroit News. Thanks, Dale.
Thank you.